Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketer's podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the retail and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journey, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of retail and e-commerce strategy at Quad, and I'm excited about today's guest, Ben Gladstone. Ben has spent 20 plus years building brands at the intersection of culture and commerce. From the floors of Leo Burnett and DDB to the C-suites at Kimberly Clark and State Farm, he's the kind of marketer who doesn't just follow culture, he's built brand campaigns inside it. Whether that's architecting the Like a Good Neighbor revival, reinventing Huggies globally into a $1 billion growth engine, or having lived the front lines of the smartphone war, spearheading BlackBerry's fight against Apple. Today, Ben is the founder of Happy Rock Studios, a branded investment platform betting on the next generation of category-defining companies. His latest build, Goldfinch Golf, is a culture-first golf brand that he took from zero to acquisition in under 8 months. Goldfinch is a bet that the sport's fastest-growing audience deserves a brand built for how they actually live. So Ben's here because he sits at the crossroads of growth strategy, creative leadership, and the relentless pursuit of cultural relevance. Ben, welcome to the show, my brother.
Marcus, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Your bio is a mouthful. We've got a lot to talk about today. I'd love to start with Goldfinch Golf because it really doesn't feel like a golf merch brand.
It's funny. We actually debated when we first were discussing the brand and what we wanted to be in the market, whether we were a lifestyle or a golf brand. It came back to golf ultimately, but we like to think of ourselves beyond that. We stretch beyond that. We think the really at the core is our purpose. You know, I think good marketers, we've always learned like living your purpose. And so that really sits at the heart of it. And I think that gives us license to first and foremost, be a golf brand, but also licensed to play in potentially other spaces and places and adjacencies into the future as we think about growth.
That's fascinating. So you're saying basically Goldfinch isn't really a golf brand. It's a brand that just is starting selling golf apparel.
We are a golf brand. Okay. First and foremost. We were definitely born from the sport. But what's interesting is when you really, and we'll probably get into this, when you talk about our purpose, our reason for being, and this idea of adjustment, like it transcends lots of things. Golf happens to be one of them and where we're focused because it's what we're passionate about. And we think that how we make things and that align with our purpose works for golf.
Why don't you say a little bit more about what the purpose of the brand is as you see it?
Yeah. I come from a long line of marketing leaders that preached and pounded on, live your purpose, right? Define your purpose, understand what your purpose is and be authentic to that and really use that as fuel to how you think about creating things, how you think about marketing yourself, how you get consistent with how you talk about yourself. So all those things that we learn about from a marketing perspective. And so for us, it's really as simple as we believe in the constant adjustment of the game and we exist to help players keep adjusting. And that really transcends how we make our products, from the sweatshirts and how we think about the cups so they don't bunch on your golf swing to how we make aerodynamic type of golf divot tools that just slide easy to how we think about our towels and how they're adjusted to fit really well on the bag and carry around your neck. And so all those little things really transcend the product, how we approach it, how we think about the game and the philosophy, and how we tell stories around it.
Well, as you're saying that, one of the things that comes to my mind is authenticity in terms of, oftentimes I've marveled to watch brands that lose sight of the fundamental questions they're answering for their consumers or their customers. But instead, it sounds like you're highly focused on, solving that problem, for lack of a better word, that your customer has?
Yeah, I think we were definitely conscious of problems to solve, how we think about consumer problems when it comes to the different things we make. We're thinking not just about problems, but also opportunities. And that creates the kind of design, I think, leads to how we design things and how we go about, you know, creative storytelling. But yeah, I think that we definitely, build through that lens of adjustment.
That leads to a question I was kind of thinking about preparing. You know, you kind of built that brand from scratch. So in terms of building a brand from scratch, what do you do first and what do you ignore?
It's a really good question. I think if as simple as it sounds, it starts with an idea, and it's putting it on paper. And, you know, it was funny. I had kind of marinated over this over years and years of just this. What is potential white space in the category? What could a brand be, and how could it exist and fulfill needs and solve problems and do all those things? And so, it was really putting down on paper and starting with the concept and talking with people about it and getting, you know, it's like, you know, getting feedback. And that's really what led to the partnership we have with the Gulf Technology Company, who's become a strategic and capital partner for us. You know, it was putting it on paper and sharing with him to see, like, get feedback. And he was like, whoa, I really like this. What is this? And that led to our partnership, which really made it happen. But, you know, it's never one thing, you know, like these things, they never are. It's like marinating over years and, you know, synthesizing and then finally like putting something on paper and then continuing to, like, it's so funny. I've gone back and I've looked at where we started, you know, and like what was on paper for that initial pitch to where we are today. It's always just, you know, a good reminder of the journey.
That's a good segue, because what you're saying, I think, is that while you have to be relentlessly focused on the purpose of your brand and what problem you're solving, you also have to be willing to reinvent yourself to adjust to what the market needs.
I mean, I'm living proof of trying to reinvent and adjust myself. A corporate refugee, I think that's the term.
I love that term.
Yeah
I haven't heard that before.
Yeah Living walking proof.
Well, let's segue this conversation a little bit, because it's fascinating to me to think about in terms of starting a brand from scratch is very different than a brand reinvention, and you've been part of, you know, several. So you know, in terms of brand reinventions, what's a common thread that most people miss?
All the entrepreneurship, I think, runs through all of it. No matter, I really think that no matter what role you're playing with brand reinventions, you're inventing things. If you're doing your job right, and the work that I'm most proud of, that is like you're inventing things to help them market too. Experiences, engagements, new ways to, you know, improve customers' interactions with you. And so I think that's always been like the common thread in my career, if I call it that, has been taking like small kind of entrepreneurial brands at the time, whether I was in an agency or on the corporate side, and kind of being able to be an entrepreneur and help grow in lots of different ways.
That's really cool. So entrepreneurship as a thread it's a really good one. A little harder to do in big companies versus small.
Like, I don't know, like it is harder, but also easier.
Say more.
Because you have, I think within a corporation, you have the resources.
Okay.
And so how you navigate that yes, is a totally different type of like entrepreneurship, and but it's still relationships.
Oh, I get that. And obviously you become passionate champion for your idea inside a large organization. You have the resources. Whereas if you're on a budding brand from scratch, you have to enthusiastically get people to invest in those resources.
Yes. And then drive growth early enough that you can start to self-invest and prove that you, yes,
that makes sense. But, you've kind of done that at holding companies and startups.
Yeah.
What do people get wrong? Where do big brands consistently get kind of reinvention wrong? Ooh.
I think it usually starts from the wrong place. I think it usually sometimes tends to start as an advertising problem versus a brand problem. And sometimes those get confused.
Ah, I love that. I think I know where you're going with that. Instead of identifying that you have a fundamental problem with what your brand is, you think it's how it's being represented to the consumer, and you're missing that mark.
That 100%, or it's a product problem. And you're trying to solve a product issue with either a brand or an advertising issue. I think oftentimes it's the starting point. It's the brief. What are you trying to accomplish in really simple terms?
I really like that. Cause you're tapping into something that I've run into occasionally, and that is, and I, of course you've heard the phrase, I don't remember who cited it, that brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room.
Amen.
Oftentimes we're talking to people and it seems to me that they have a very different perception of what their brand is or who they are as an organization versus what the market sees. And that fundamental gap, if you will, sometimes comes from a lack of humility or maybe a lack of understanding, but that sets you down the wrong road.
I could not agree more. Like, I think there's complacency that exists in that from a corporate perspective, that where it becomes about like trying to get the right answer, like, and versus the right answer. Like it, and
are you saying an answer that you think you want to hear versus the actual truth?
Right. And I feel like there's a lot of corporate gymnastics and a lot of this and that around the real problems. What do we really need to solve for? But there, you know, obviously there are great leaders that know how to address that and then build teams to accomplish it. But that swirl is really deadly.
Well, that kind of leads to another good question, because you've led teams inside some big organizations. What separates those high-performing marketing teams from an average one?
I don't know if I ever did it really, really well. Still learning. I think, authentic, honest, a level of servant leadership, and decisiveness. Man, but like so much is team dynamic and honesty and building real relationships and like understanding where people truly think they can add value, like giving people the license not to bullshit. And the best teams I've seen create that, you know, and the best teams I've been a part of been able to create that. But yeah, yeah.
There's a lot to unpack there. I love that. First of all, let me compliment you, because to start with, I don't know that I've ever done it right. Tells me that you're doing it right, because it's one of my what I believe is one of the most important principles to success is a constant dissatisfaction with your own performance and how can I improve and optimize. So the fact that you say it that way means that you're looking at it in a similar way.
I appreciate that. And I think, you know, you hit on something interesting, Marcus, for me too. Like, part of my insecurity on leadership is I've also found I'm a doer too. Like, I like to, and so that balance between pure directing versus directing and doing, was something I always kind of like had to balance throughout my career.
I get it. So, well, there's also some real power in being a player coach, you know,
Back a little bit to that entrepreneurial type of spirit that I feel. I mean, I've always been like about that, like, and oftentimes it's hurt me too. I've run too fast.
So, so I know that you've got some amazing stories with Like a Good Neighbor and the Huggy story, and even your failing fight against Apple with BlackBerry.
The best.
Tell me a leadership principle or something that you learned in a failure.
I mean, I'd have to look at BlackBerry. We talk about you talk about Kodak, you talk about Xerox, you talk about these inventors of the category that of their categories, BlackBerry, same. That were manufacturing led organizations and companies that couldn't get out of their own way and behave like a marketing led organization, which is what they needed to do. And think about that from how they think about their products, how they think about just understanding consumers. And so, you know, having been on it was crazy that the frontline view that we had at the time, it was a small piece. It was like a promotional business at Leo Burnett, and we grew it to a huge global, like at the time when they were growing. And we saw firsthand Apple, you know, coming on the scene. And I'll never forget the when we pitched BlackBerry apps, like the idea of apps and like partnering with different publishers, whether it was ESPN or New York Times to create native apps. And I'll never forget like that meeting where they're like, no, people really just love the email.
Did you know then?
I mean, you knew going into the meeting and just how they operated, you know, it was all about it was all about the hardware when you first started, and it wasn't about the software, which is really how you get into thinking like a marketer.
Fascinating.
And so, you know, I think seeing kind of the hard-headedness, the unwillingness to change, the unwillingness to even understand the consumer landscape, that was pretty eye-opening. That was jaw-dropping.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Lacking in creativity. So how do you protect, you know, a kind of a creative mindset inside an organization, or how do you encourage it if you see that it's going sideways?
Well, it became like our function became one of an advertising agency. And so it was about the brand. It was about positioning. It was about telling stories that we thought would bring, you know, the BlackBerry brand to life. And we did it well. I mean, we did some things really well. But again, you know, we talked going back to the beginning of the conversation, product problem.
Yeah, there's a fundamental problem, product problem. And it dovetails with one of the things we were saying, a lack of awareness in terms of your customer.
And what people are going to want, what people are going to want to do with their phones. And look where we are now.
All right. Well, I gotta throw an AI question in here. You're obviously doing a lot of AI augmented work in the Venture Studio and whatnot. How is it changing how you think brands are getting built, and how are you using it differently?
I'll talk about how we use it with Goldfinch, because you know it's so funny. AI, it's a catch-all. It means so many different things, right? And so how we apply it to, I think about it as, you know, the four phases of a project exist across everything we do. There's planning, there's development, there's execution and optimization. How we use AI in each one of those phases, you know, varies. Like, so there's, when it comes to planning, how we tap it for consumer research and how we use it to really think about crawling and looking at conversation across the social sphere, how we look at it just for inspiration conceptually in the planning phase, like even like concept development, like renders, like quick product renders, like we're working on range case. We did a bunch in AI around that. So it really hits like every part of planning, whether it's consumer marketing, whether it's product development. We're even using it on the operations side with our customer service and like starting to really use AI to analyze the different email feedback, consistency in language, how we're responding to different, you know, similar scenarios, but in different ways so we can create some consistency. So we're using it to augment in lots of different ways. When it comes to production in the creative sense, we've used it in some small ways, nothing that involves humans. We've used it in some renderings of like some animation. But for us, we want to use AI. We want to be clear when we're using AI. We think that for us as a brand, authenticity is really important. And there's something just so pure about golf and the sport that trying to fake those things is something that we're really struggling with. And so we're really selective if we do use any sort of AI images for marketing purposes, that we're super, super specific about it.
Got it. Trust and authenticity is, you know, central to this whole emerging dynamic, especially with content.
Yeah. And it's like, we've played around. I mean, we've made ads, we've made human models wearing our stuff, and some of it looks really cool and we had some fun with it, but it's also not totally right. Like the products are off, and again, the models are advancing every day, but like you can get it to be pretty accurate, but there's still some hallucinations. It's not to say we're not going to use it in creative ways.
Well documented that AI is the dumbest it's ever going to be today. Let's pivot a little bit to you, man.
Yeah.
You know, how do you charge your batteries?
You know, family, obviously, number one, my kids, like I got two teenage daughters.
Super. And they still talk to you?
On occasion, when you can get a word in,
at
least in my house, but yeah, no, they're just awesome. Great.
That's amazing. I love that. What else?
Anything outside, I am just like an active, I need to always stay active. Whether it's walking, biking, golfing, rowing, swimming, like just, I really just love nature. I love the outdoors, no matter what the season is. Like I didn't grow up in Chicago, so I've grown more and more accustomed to the winters here. So, but I mean, what charges me? Ideas, creativity, in the purest form, design, good design, attention to detail. I started at Leo Burnett, and they always, this line, they that just always has stuck with me. Creativity has the power to transform human behavior. And it's just so true. Like, and yeah, really appreciate the art and really appreciate how humans create art.
So, Ben, I like to add and close with this question a lot. If you could tell your younger self one principle that you learned later that has been essential to your success today, what would it be?
I love this question. I think any pause is because there's so many lessons. And I'm trying to figure out the right way to put them in terms of a principle. I think it probably boils down to move slow to move far.
I like that. Say more about that. Explain.
I think there, you know, whether it's move fast and break things and that mantra, that mentality of moving fast, which is important, I think oftentimes gets confused. And I think probably confused me too, in terms of like moving fast in moments and moving too quick to really step back and think about the bigger picture. I think it's something that I probably would have been rewarded by if I lived up to that. Especially in a day and age right now where shiny objects are everywhere.
We used
to talk shiny object syndrome. And whether it's making money fast, growing my career fast, moving up fast, doing something quickly for a client and ignoring the rest of the things that needed to happen, you know, there's taking a breath, thinking about, you know, that tortoise, that slow and steady tortoise, wins the race.
I love that. That's fascinating. All right. Well, dude, if somebody wants to get in connect with you, what's the best way to do it?
Feel free. Shoot me an email. Hit me up on ben.gladstone@goldfinch.golf. And follow us on Instagram. Check us out, goldfinch_golf. And our website is goldfinch.golf, if you didn't figure that out.
Killer. Dude, what? I'm so glad to have you on. Thank you so much for the great conversation. Really enjoyed it.
Appreciate it. Yeah, so did I, Marcus. Thank you, man. Really.
And thank you for joining us on Directly Speaking today, everybody. We hope you enjoyed the content and getting to know Ben a little bit better with me. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care, everybody.